Good evening, brethren and sisters. There are a few others coming, so I'm not going to go straight into it just yet. I'm thankful that Brother Jeff and his team have given me some PA. I didn't want to have to yell. I presume that those who are going to sit up the back, you can hear me okay? Good. So just as a prelude to what we want to do here tonight, if you wanted a really full version of the wonderful things that happened in 2017, and as I said the other day, I regard 2017 as in many ways even more significant than 1967. Now, 1967 was the year of my baptism in February of that year, and in June the 5th, we had the Six-Day War. And that was a fulfilment of Daniel 8, verses 12 to 14, you know, the 2,300 days, which started with Alexander crossing the Hellespont in 334 BC. And if you add the additional year that you have to add, because the Gregorian calendar doesn't have a zero year, whereas it should, the Muslim calendar does. The Muslims have got a year zero. And you take Alexander's exploits from that year, you get your 2,300 lobs in 1967. And of course, it's Luke 21:24, the end of the time of the Gentiles as far as God's concerned, because there was the cleansing of the land. Now, we're not talking about a moral cleansing, are we? We're talking about the Gentiles being removed from the land. And that's what happened in 1967, because that Gentile dominion really began, at least from the perspective of Daniel's prophecy, it began in 334 BC, because it wasn't that long after Alexander was walking into the city of Jerusalem and taking control of the land. So 1967 was a remarkable year in every way, but I think 2017 was even more remarkable, because of the number of things that happened in relation to Bible prophecy. If you wanted to see the full series, it's on the Christadelphian video site. That's the UK rugby site that's run by Brother Art Courtnell and the rugby ecclesia. And the easiest way to get there, perhaps, is to go into the website that Brother James Barrett actually built for me. Now, I'm not into that kind of thing, so I rely upon people that know what they're doing. And Brother James, of course, with Katie, his wife, is here at this Bible school. And I was very appreciative of his work in that regard, because I know that some folk have got value out of it. It's got a whole heap of information, which I'm often asked for, but, you know, nowadays you've got to sort of write an email and send it off. Well, he said to me, well, why don't we just put it up on a site and people, if they want it, they can go in there and download it. Wow, that's good. But there is a tab on that site for access to videos that Brother Art Courtnell has put up, and he's got playlists. And one of the playlists, there's three playlists, all the videos, there's single talks and there's study series. Now, if you go into there and you get into the study series playlist, somewhere near the top you're going to see an icon which has, unfortunately, it doesn't stand out all that well, but it's got 2017 on it. So somewhere up near the top, you'll see that. It's a five-part series, which I did at Couts Ecclesia, so they've seen this. And only Debbie can tell you that it was, it's a lot of things happened in 2017. So if you want to get in there, that's the easy way to access it. Now, the website is very simple, what do you reckon comes next? JimCowie.info, I-N-F-O, for information. Okay, so if you just type into Google, JimCowie.info, up she comes, top one. And you can go in there and have a look. That might be helpful to you. I'm going to give you a very quick, short, 20-minute. Nobody believes that, do they? I'm going to give you a run-through of Ezekiel 38. I'm going to start with the bookends. Ezekiel 38 verse 2 requires a Russian autocrat. We know that, don't we? Son of man, set thy face against Gog. Gog is the title of a dictator. It means the one at the top. It requires a dictatorship. Brother Thomas talks about the autocrat of all the Russias, because he is, as we read there, the prince of Rosh, Meshach and Tubal. Rosh, most ancient form of the name of Russia. Meshach, the Muscovites, that is those who inhabit the area around Moscow, and Tubal. There is a city called Tobolsk in Siberia. And so we've got here the entire Eurasian continent, because Russia is a pretty big country. It goes right from the Baltic right across to Vladivostok. You know, basically, they're snuggling up against America. They're not that far from Alaska. So it's a huge area of land. So this is a dictator that controls that whole region. Now, I think we've got him. Personally, if you ask me, don't repeat this because you get criticised for saying these sort of things. I don't think there is a better person for the job of the Gog of Ezekiel 38 verse 2 than the man who now occupies the highest seat in the Kremlin. His name is Vladimir Putin. Whether he proves to be the man at Armageddon, only time will tell. But if you've heard me talk about Habakkuk 2 and the way that he came to power in the year 2000, you'll have no doubt in your mind that we're dealing with that man. Okay. Now, if I get a chance, I'll just mention that briefly. So even if he passes off the scene, if he's run over by a bus tomorrow, that won't really matter, because he has established the system. And that's what we're talking about, a system. They say he has got the vertical of power. You know what a vertical of power is? It's the czarist system. It's where one man sits at the top. He makes all the decisions. Nobody else's input is important. He alone rules the country. And that, of course, is true of Vladimir Putin. If you oppose him, what happens to you? You go into jail, or you end up being put in the ground. And they will come after you if you oppose that man. So he fits the character of the dictator required by Bible prophecy, both in Habakkuk 2 and in Ezekiel 38. As I said, only time will tell whether or not he proves to be the man. So that's one bookend. The other bookend is Ezekiel 38 verse 13. Now this has just exploded in the last 2 years. On the 16th of June, you can correct me here, I think it was the 16th of June 2016. Have I got that date right? Anyway, it was June 2016. The British people voted 51.9% to leave the European Union. Nobody, including their Prime Minister at the time, David Cameron, expected that to happen, so he lost his job. And Theresa May took over the Prime Ministership of Britain. Now, she was a pro-European as well. But Brexit changed everything, didn't it? I can well remember as a young person in my teenage years sitting in the Cumberland Hall listening to a brother from Africa, South Africa, and he was being introduced, giving a talk on prophecy, and the chairman got up and said that Britain would never join the common market. And the body language of that brother was interesting. Well, of course, Britain did join the common market, didn't they? Under Edward Heath. A little later on in 1973, they joined the common market. And we as Bible students were disappointed at that, weren't we? Because we know that Europe doesn't belong to, that Britain rather, doesn't belong to Europe. You'd be aware, of course, that when the Romans left Britain in 310 AD, right, 10 years later, the Roman Empire divided into two, had many divisions in its history, but it divided into two for the last time. So by the time we got the two legs of Nebuchadnezzar's image, Britain was no longer part of the Roman Empire. So God was at work even back then to make sure that Britain wasn't part of the Roman Empire. And we, of course, were waiting. And we waited a long time, didn't we? Who would have thought that? 2016, before Britain leaves the European Union. Now, it's been a bumpy road so far, and I would be very surprised if Theresa May keeps her job. Boris Johnson, who was a Brexit man, resigned from the position of Foreign Secretary because he opposes the current position of the Tory party. And Theresa May, on the 8th of June 2017, did something very foolish. She went to the electorate in Britain thinking she would improve her 17-seat majority in the House of Commons, and she lost it. And she now depends upon a Northern Ireland party formed by Ian Paisley, who was one of the most anti-Catholic people in history. He's the guy that got up in the European Parliament in 1988, when Pope John Paul II was giving a speech, and said, "You are the Antichrist." Right, so there's no doubt about his qualifications. Well, this is his party. He's long since dead, but this is his party, and Theresa May now depends upon that party to stay in office. And they're very anti-Catholic Europe. Okay, so she's got problems. The day will probably come when she will be sidelined, and someone who will promote what they call a hard Brexit, that is, cut, clean cut. She wants a soft Brexit. She wants to keep certain of the European laws and things. But if we read her scriptures, that's not going to happen. Britain will be separate from Europe, absolutely, and will have to rebuild its ties with its former colonies, those countries who are the young lions, that is Australia, Canada, New Zealand. It's quite often left out of the list, by the way, New Zealand. But it should be there, because it has a British form of government. And in fact, the three countries just named all had the Queen as their titular head of state. And of course, you can add to that India, because India also has a British parliamentary system. So they're the young lions, and Britain is going to have to build stronger ties with them. And it will be trading ties, which is, of course, what it says. The merchants, see what it says in verse 13? The merchants of Tarshish and the young lions thereof. So we've seen some dramatic things occur in relation to Brexit. And that's an ongoing thing. But, you know, the more exciting thing to me in verse 13 is what it says at the beginning of the verse. See what it says there? Sheba and Dedan and the merchants of Tarshish will object to the Gogian invasion of the land of Israel. Well, Sheba and Dedan are going to be the first cabs off the rank to object to the Gogian invasion, not Britain, they come next. So why would that be the case? Well, because they're allies. Sheba is Yemen. Dramatic things are happening in Yemen. Do you think there's suffering in Syria? There's a lot more suffering in Yemen. There's 17 million people, and many of them are going to perish because the Saudi Arabians have locked the ports. The Houthi rebels that are supported by Iran have got control of a large portion of the country, but the Saudi Arabians, who are supporting the legitimate government of Yemen, are pushing back on them, and the sufferers, of course, are the people in the sat and the meat and the sandwich, the people. And no ships are coming into port, except Saudi Arabian ones with weapons. Okay, so they've blocked the ports of Yemen. Terrible tragedy going on there. But God's at work, because you see, Yemen has got to come in to the Gulf State Union. Yemen's got to be part of the Saudi Arabian alliance. And that's what's happening. Now, what about Dedan? Well, Dedan is Saudi Arabia and the Gulf States. So here we've got Sheba and Dedan. And the dramatic thing that is happening, brothers and sisters, is that the developments that occurred in 2017 they're mind-boggling. Because Saudi Arabia used to be, along with Egypt and the Gulf States, in the vanguard of the enemies of Israel, who wanted to destroy them. And that's the situation for the last 50 years. But it all changed in 2017. You know why it changed? Because Donald Trump was elected the President of the United States of America. That's why it changed. Donald Trump has a son-in-law, Jared Kushner, who is a Jew. His favourite daughter, Ivanka, is married to Jared Kushner. Jared Kushner is his advisor on Middle East affairs, for good reasons, because he's a very close friend of two important men in the Middle East, Benjamin Netanyahu and Mohammed bin Salman, aged 32, who in June last year was made the Crown Prince of Saudi Arabia. Now, you know what that means? The Crown Prince basically runs the country. He's like the Prime Minister. And King Saud, his father, Salman, I should say, is basically a figurehead. King Salman doesn't have the same views as his son, Mohammed bin Salman. If it was left to King Salman, he wouldn't allow women to drive in Saudi Arabia. But Mohammed bin Salman says that women can drive in Saudi Arabia. So he's got a much more modernistic view, and he's got a much more pro-Israel view. Now, he used to be the defence minister of Saudi Arabia. And as the defence minister, 2016 I think it was, they had a huge military exercise on the border with Syria and Iraq. And there were 20 Middle Eastern nations involved in that exercise. And the reason for that was that they were preparing to go into Syria if it looked as though the rebels would lose their cause. Yeah. He made, as the defence minister, an assessment of whether or not Saudi Arabia could win a war against Iran, because he knows it's coming. He knows that Saudi Arabia is one day, pretty soon, going to have a war with Iran. And his assessment was that Saudi Arabia wouldn't win that war. He needed a very strong ally. So guess who he chose? Israel. And Donald Trump's son-in-law just happens to be a close friend of both Mohammed bin Salman, who's about the same age as him, and Benjamin Netanyahu, who is an American-educated MBA. A man, by the way, that God put in there. And he has turned Israel around, completely turned Israel around. They were a basket case for 50 or 60 years of their history. I mean, socialist prime ministers haven't got a clue about economies, have they? But he comes into power and he's turned that country. Israel's now number three on the NASDAQ. He got up in the United Nations last year in September and boasted that nations are now coming to Israel because they realise they need Israel. Do you know that he said, and he's quite right, that had it not been for Israel's cyber security, the internet would no longer be in use. And the nations know that's true. They have prevented the internet from being taken down, at least temporarily. Now, what would happen if the internet went down? No shopping, no service stations, no... You name it, no banking, nothing, gone. Okay, so that's how important Israel's become to the world. And when we read here in Ezekiel 38 about hast thou come to take a spoil, we've always thought that was oil. Well, there's plenty of oil in Israel. They just found 50 years' worth of shale oil in the Golan Heights, which is why they're not going to give it up. Okay, they've got oil out in the Mediterranean and gas in the Mediterranean, so there's no shortage of oil. Israel is independent. But they're also independent of American money now too. All right, they used to have to be shored up, supported by American money. Billions of dollars a year. Don't need it anymore. Now, that nation is at the forefront of technology, at the forefront of development. I mean, when the Indian Prime Minister, which is another interesting thing that happened last year, the Indian Prime Minister, is a very close relationship between Israel and India is the Eastern Tarshish. So there had to be. That's a complete change from 20 years ago. When the Indian Prime Minister went to Israel last year, Netanyahu drove him down the beach and they were in a jeep. On the back of that jeep was a small machine. They walked out into the ocean, they got a jug of water, put it in the back of the machine and drank the water that came out the bottom. Yeah, Israeli technology, you know, desalination like that. Yeah, so they're right up there, and the nations know that. So yeah, when we read about spoil, it's not just oil. There's a whole series of things. And bear this in mind, that a lot of those inventive things that are happening in Israel are through Russian Jews. And there's 1.6 million of them, and 1.4 million of those came from the early 90s when the Russian Empire was falling apart. They came to Israel, which is why we read in Zechariah 14 that Russia's going to take many captives back out of the land of Israel, back home. Why? Because, yeah, they're Russians. They were the brains trust of Russia. So there's a lot of spoil there for Gog when they come down. Now, you've heard that Trump's about to announce, he's waiting for the right timing, he's about to announce that they have a plan for the Middle East. You know what that plan is? They might have modified it since the declaration they made in November, but I'll tell you what it was. The Fox News reported that they had this inside information of what Kushner and Trump and Mohammed bin Salman and Netanyahu were cooking up. You know what it was? Oh, and also the Egyptian president. It was the rejection and a complete throwing out of the old plan for there to be a Palestinian state in the West Bank, and that any future Palestinian state would be in the Gaza Strip with additional land provided by Egypt, who had agreed to the proposal. Now, Egypt doesn't mind giving some land in the northern Sinai because it's infested with ISIS. So it's not really all that much good to them. But that is the plan. So this thing that's hung over the Middle East for 50 years or more, that there's going to be a Palestinian state in the West Bank, which Israel captured in 1967, with East Jerusalem as its capital, has been thrown out by Saudi Arabia. Do you know that on Saudi Arabian television, right now, they are showing a series on the history of Israel, saying that Israel has a right to be in the land? That's happening right now in Saudi Arabia, a television program. Trump loves television programs, as you know. So things have changed dramatically, brothers and sisters, since his election. I want to ask you a question. If Hillary Clinton had been elected President of the United States of America, how much do you think would have changed? Zero. Yeah, absolutely zero. So God made sure, even if it meant Russian meddling and all the other stuff that went on. And by the way, Australians contributed to it. Yeah, we had a hand in it. There's a gentleman called Assange. Have you heard of him? Yeah. He's got a sort of French name, but he's Australian. And Julian Assange runs WikiLeaks. And before the campaign in 2016, through September, October, Assange, who of course is locked, he's holed up in an embassy in London, because if he comes out, he's going to be arrested and taken to Sweden. So he's a crook. Not all Australians are crooks, but he's a crook. And he was releasing stuff that had been given to WikiLeaks, which didn't do the Clinton campaign any good at all. And of course, this accumulation of things. I mean, who? In March, April 2016, how many people and how many of us would have thought that Donald Trump had any hope of being elected the President of the United States of America? It wasn't going to happen, was it? But you see, God wanted it to happen, because he wants that man in a position to turn the world upside down. And he has turned it upside down. And there have been these dramatic developments in the Middle East that would not have happened if Clinton had been elected. I think that's marvellous. It's just marvellous, because what it means is that God has said, as I said the other day, he said to his son, let's get this thing moving. You know, the obdurate thing, the thing that we were hoping for was peace. Because when you read Ezekiel 38, what do you read about? Now, I'll come back to verse 8 in a minute in relation to the West Bank. Just remind me if I forget that. But have a look at what we expect in the Middle East. Let's look at verse 10 and 11 of Ezekiel 38. Thus saith Adonai Yahweh, it shall also come to pass that at the same time shall things come into thy mind, this is talking to Gog, and thou shalt think an evil thought. And thou shalt say, I will go up to the land of unwalled villages. Now, if you've looked up the Hebrew for unwalled villages, it's the Hebrew word perazar, and it means a land of open spaces. It's not talking about kibbutzim or moshevim, but it's a land of open spaces. Now, that's not true of Israel today, because you see the West Bank, they've got a green line and they've got a huge wall around it. And if you want to go from Jerusalem to Nazareth, you've got to go right out to Tel Aviv, up Highway 2, across the Valley of Jezreel to get to Nazareth. You can't go up the central massif of the land. There's a beautiful highway, but it's built because of military use. They won't let the Palestinians use it, by the way. So it's there for military use. But you can't use that because, you see, it isn't a land of open spaces. But it will be when Israel annexes the West Bank, and I'll talk about that in a second. But what are we expecting before Armageddon? Peace, isn't it? So it says, I will go to them that are at rest, and the word rest, shakat, means to repose, that dwell safely, means to live securely, all of them dwelling without walls. So the 36-foot wall has got to come down. It's clip lock, it's Lego. So you just bring a crane up and put the hooks in the loops on the top of this concrete, lift it out and take it out and drop in the Mediterranean for a harbour, because Israel's building a harbour at Ashkelon. Okay, so you drop it out there as the foundations of a harbour, having neither bars nor gates. So what we're being told here is that that land has to be at peace. Now, that's been the stubborn thing, hasn't it? Ever since 1967, the stubborn thing is that, there was no prospect of peace. There is today. The nations, including European nations, by the way, are withdrawing funding from both the Fatah, that is the West Bank Palestinians led by Mahmoud Abbas, and they're certainly withdrawing it from Hamas. That's why Hamas is getting very touchy. You know, they're hitting out because money's not coming in. Do you remember that Saudi Arabia and the Gulf states cut off a little nation called Qatar, where they're going to hold a soccer tournament in 2020? Did you remember that? You know why that happened? Because Saudi Arabia and the Gulf states said, we are not going to fund Hamas anymore. Full stop. And Qatar said, well, we're going to continue to fund them. So Saudi Arabia and the Gulf states said, well, you're no longer part of us. They had to change their mind pretty quick, didn't they? Remember the Lebanese prime minister flew to Saudi Arabia and went home and resigned from his office? He came back to it in a month's time. Why did he do that? Because, you see, he was contemplating, and he's actually gone down this path, a relationship with the Iranian-supported Hezbollah in southern Lebanon in order to control the Lebanese parliament. And the Saudi Arabians said, no, 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 Iran is our enemy. You want to be in bed with them? No part of us. So we've got this cleavage between Sunni and Shiite. Iran is 100% Shiite. Saudi Arabia is mostly Sunni. And the Sunni nations, Egypt, the Gulf states, all right, and Saudi Arabia are now at war with the Shiite-dominated Iran. Now, that's going to explode one day, and Saudi Arabia knows that. So they're now cuddling up to Israel. They have already made certain progress. Universities in Saudi Arabia are teaching their students about the history of Israel and the Jewish right to the land. Can you imagine that? That's ridiculous, isn't it? But it's happening. Because, you see, at Armageddon, which, if Christ comes today, is 10 years down the road. And by that time, this alliance is going to be very, very firm. And that's why, brothers and sisters, it's Yemen, Saudi Arabia, and the Gulf states who are the first to object to the Gog invasion. That's why they come first in Ezekiel 38, verse 13. I find that exciting. Now, let's come to the West Bank. Have a look at verse 8 of Ezekiel 38. After many days thou shalt be visited, this is God talking to Gog, in the latter years thou shalt come into the land that is brought back from the sword and is gathered out of many people against the mountains of Israel. Now, when we take people to the West Bank, and we were there just a couple of months ago, and you go up to Shechem, Tel Balata they call it now, there's a brand new sign out the front. You must take a photograph of the sign. And on the top of this sign has got the State of Palestine. They're kidding themselves, aren't they? They're really kidding themselves. But the other thing that we've found in the last couple of trips we've taken there, and Derek will tell you this is true, is that when you have a Palestinian driver, and you basically have to have one in the West Bank, and you pass by a place, like, for example, Shiloh. I wanted to stop at Shiloh so we could talk about the scripture being fulfilled. Look at this place, a barren hill, which is what God said it would be. Well, by the way, there's a new Jewish settlement on the top of the hill. But we want to stop there. I mean, why not? And I said to the driver, look, we want to stop here. He said, oh, no, 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 no. That's Israeli. Really? And the next place you want to stop, oh, it's Israeli. What do you own of the West Bank? Israel's already got a lock on a good proportion of the West Bank, and the Palestinians know it. Do you know the very last decision that was made anywhere in the world, political decision, was made just in the hours before New Year's Eve 2018. 31st of December 2017, the Likud party, which is Benjamin Netanyahu's political party, met in his absence deliberately. He didn't want to be there when this decision was made because it would cost him too much in his relationship with world leaders. His party made some very important decisions about the West Bank. They decided before 2017 was out that they would annex the Jewish settlements in the West Bank. And when you look at the map, that's quite a lot of land. They would become Israeli property permanently. And that would be as a prelude for the next couple of years when they will put legislation through the Knesset to annex the whole of the West Bank. It'll become part of Israel proper. That decision was made in 2017. And that's exactly what the Bible says has to happen, because Gog is going to come down upon what mountains? Not the mountains of Palestine, no, but upon the mountains of Israel. The West Bank has to be part of proper, of Israel proper, and that's when it's going to become a land of wide open spaces, because you'll be able to get in the car, a rental car in Jerusalem, and drive straight up the central massif of the land. You'll cut at least 45 minutes off your journey to Nazareth or the Galilee. It's happening, all right? And that happened in 2017. Now, boy, there's a lot of things in my mind here. I don't know where to go next, but there was something, and I, you know, because I'm old, it's gone.
what will they do with all those people, you think?
There's 1.8 million Arab people in the population of Israel. Now, that's... it's quite a population out of nearly 9 million, okay? It's a reasonable number of people. But most Palestinians actually want to be part of Israel. Yeah. We went there in 2010, and we went to a lot of Palestinian shops when we were in the West Bank. And you talk to people, and those who can speak English, and they will tell you that they don't want war with Israel. In fact, there was a guy sitting on that bus when we went from Jerusalem to Ramallah. He's sitting beside me, actually. And he didn't say a word the whole way, but we were talking across the bus, on people in the bus. And we got off the bus and we had to negotiate for a 10-seat taxi. And this is not the 2017 trip, this is 2010. And he could see our difficulty trying to communicate because none of us can really speak Arabic. And he stopped there. He didn't walk away. He stopped and listened to the conversation. And then he sidled up and he said, "Can I help? I'll interpret for you." And when we'd done the dealing, he said to me, he said, "Look, here's my phone number." He wrote his phone number down on a piece of paper and said, "When you're going through the West Bank, you get into strife and you can't get your message across, just give me a call. Tell me what you want, hand the phone to the person you're dealing with, and I'll look after you." And he said to me, "You know," he said, "we want you Westerners here. We don't want strife with Israel. We just want to live peaceful lives. Most of the Palestinians are like that. So when Israel does annex, there'll be a lot of joy in some Palestinian homes. There'll always be the hardliners. But you know where they're going to end up? In the Palestinian state down in the Gaza Strip." Now I'm going to conclude on this. I know Paul doesn't believe me, but I am. Zephaniah chapter 2 and Joel chapter 3. Can you come there with me? Zephaniah chapter 2. I think it was Gary who said this is a hard book to find, isn't it? It's page 1139 in the Oxford Bible. So what does the Bible say, brethren and sisters, about a Palestinian state? Well, in two places it says quite a deal. Zephaniah 2 verse 4. This is a new section in the prophecy of Zephaniah. "For Gaza shall be forsaken, and Ashkelon a desolation. They shall drive out Ashdod at the noonday, and Ekron shall be rooted up. Woe unto the inhabitants of the sea coast, the nation of the Kerethites." You know who the Kerethites were? Philistines, yeah. So where do you get the name Palestine from? Philistia, yeah. Does the West Bank have a sea coast? No. This one does. It's got a sea coast. Does the Gaza Strip have a sea coast? Yes. Gaza Strip's on the Mediterranean, okay. So you can read on down there, verse 6, "And the sea coast shall be for dwellings and cottages and for shepherds and for folds for flocks. And the coast shall be for the remnant of the house of Judah." So they'll get a state probably, but they're going to lose it post-Armageddon because it's going to be taken over by the Jews who are cleansed in the land and those 40 years later who turn up with Elijah. Now the other reference is Joel chapter 3. Joel 3 and verse 4. You know, what we read here is about Armageddon, isn't it? We know that from verse 1. You've got the Valley of Jehoshaphat, which is outside the walls of Jerusalem on the east. It's the Kidron Valley. So this is where the Russian army will be destroyed, and there'll be 185,000, I'm pretty sure, because the pattern was set in the days of Hezekiah. And that's all I need, because the only place left in the land to take will be the old city. And they're not going to even take that, because it says in the prophecy of Isaiah, "They shall not fire an arrow there." And the Assyrian army of old didn't fire an arrow. And the Russian army of the future, tomorrow, is not going to fire any cannon because they'll be under strict orders from the Pope and from the head of the Russian Orthodox Church not to damage the holy places. Okay? So they won't fire an arrow. So all of that was set in the patterns of history of old. There's not a detail, by the way, brothers and sisters, is not there. It's all the details there. And so what we have here is the Battle of Armageddon, and then God talks about the way they've treated his people. See verse 3, "They've cast lots for my people." That's what Russia's going to do. When they come, they want to take captives away, right? "They cast lots for my people and have given a boy for a harlot and sold a girl for wine that they might drink. Yea, and what have ye to do with me, O Tyre and Sidon?" So who's up there? Hezbollah, well, they're going to be quieted before Armageddon, but they've done some awful things in there, so they're going to have to pay a price too. And then it says this, "And all the coasts of Palestine." Coasts of Palestine. Palestinian state in the Gaza Strip, which is what? America under Donald Trump, Saudi Arabia, the Gulf states, and Egypt have already determined will be done. How far are we down the road, brothers and sisters, do you think? Yeah. We'll leave it at that, eh? Something to chew on when you go to bed. Thank you.